Today on Maine Calling, America's 250th birthday and the meaning of patriotism. Saturday is Independence Day, and not just any Independence Day. It is the nation's 250th birthday, or semi-quincentennial. What does this milestone mean to you? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we learn about some of the events coming up in Maine to celebrate the semi-quincentennial. And we discuss the whole complicated concept of patriotism, how it has evolved, and its relevance in today's political climate. How do we see ourselves as American? Where is the line between jingoism and patriotism? How do you feel about symbols such as the U.S. flag? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. This 4th of July is a major milestone. It is America's 250th birthday. Are you feeling patriotic? Well, we'll examine what patriotism has looked like over the centuries on this program and what it means today. Joining me for the hour, Shenna Bellows, who is Maine's Secretary of State and Chair of the Maine Semi-Quincentennial Commission. Jamie Rice is Deputy Director of the Maine Historical Society, and Dr. Adam Tuchinski is at the University of Southern Maine. He's a history professor as well as provost and vice president of academic affairs. We invite you to join the conversation. How are you celebrating the semi-quincentennial, and what does patriotism mean to you? Has your thinking about what patriotism means changed through your lifetime? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us on this beautiful Monday. Adam, Dr. Tuchinski, I will start with you. When we talk about patriotism, what do we mean? Is patriotism simply love of one's country, or do you think of it as a historian is meaning something else?
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you all. And I will have my history professor hat on today rather than my provost hat on. And so you'll have to stop me from blathering on too long, but I will not be celebrating the 250th anniversary. And I say that as a historian, because in September, I will be celebrating the 237th anniversary of the United States, which is the period of the Constitution. And so what I celebrate often is the principles that govern the country. And as a historian, oftentimes we have to think, what are we patriotic about? Is it the nation? Is it our principles? But at the time of the Declaration of Independence, most figures didn't refer to the United States as one thing. Commonly, the grammar was the United States are. Even as late as 1855, Walt Whitman said in the preface of Leaves of Grass that the United States are the greatest poem. And it was only at the time of the Civil War that we began to refer to us as a unified nation in the way that we know it today. And part of that was extending and expanding the Constitution. I am patriotic. I do love July 4th. It's my favorite holiday, and I will be celebrating that. But I just have to put my annoying history professor hat on for the moment.
That's fine. We welcome that. But I have to say, you say to yourself, I am patriotic. When you say that, what does that mean to you? When you say I am patriotic, because I have a feeling when everybody says that, it might mean something different.
Well, yes, it is kind of challenging in a sense of patriotism in a nation of our size is kind of a curious modern phenomenon that we feel a sense of solidarity and love to people who we've never met 300 million people. But I think where it emerges the most in me, probably like most Mainers, when you get on an airplane and you're sitting next to someone in Maine, you feel an instant joy and connection with them, an attachment to place or a place's values, a sense of fraternity. They feel like family. Or if you're outside the country and you encounter another American, you do feel a connection, and that's something that emerged historically, and it's I can't quite figure it out, but during the World Cup, instantly I feel a sense of pride in accomplishments or the Olympics, and it is something that you can't really shake, I think.
All right. Well, I want to hear about a whole bunch of the events coming up for the semi-quincentennial and what's going on at the Maine Historical Society. But first, I'm going to ask each of you, Shanna and Jamie, as Americans, as humans, as Mainers, what patriotism means to you. Shanna.
So for me, patriotism is rooted in our founding documents and our founding principles. So what I love about the Declaration of Independence, and of course on America's 250th birthday, we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration, is that first line, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And of course, they were talking about white propertied men. But when I think about our country, our nation, the ever ongoing journey to try to make that promise real for everyone, that everyone is equal, that we are all entitled to the rights of life and liberty and happiness. That's what patriotism means to me.
So, are you going to feel patriotic this Saturday?
Oh, absolutely. I love July 4th. My grandfather, Bill Bellows, was a history teacher, an American history teacher, and he used to share with me that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, they, of course, were signers of the Declaration, and they died on July 4th. And in a very odd and touching coincidence, my grandfather died on July 4th. So I always think of him and I think of just the founders and those promises, those American values.
Wow, really interesting. And of course, I believe it was Adams that said Jefferson still lives and didn't know that Jefferson had died, right? Adams nodding his head. Jamie
Indeed.
Rice, your turn. What does patriotism mean to you?
I think I can have a variety of meanings over time, but I think essentially either, someone who is a fellow citizen of a nation, or someone who is willing or able to make a sacrifice in support of their nation. So someone who's really kind of invested in the ideals. But I think that that term has evolved and can mean lots of different things. Sometimes it can be maybe a little bit associated with nationalism. So I think it depends on the time, but to answer the end question, yes, I'll feel very patriotic. It's hard not to with the 250th upon us.
Okay. And Adam, let me ask you about that. Jamie used the word nationalism. I used the word jingoism in a piece that I recorded earlier in the hour. What is the line between patriotism and something like nationalism or jingoism? This is a really relevant question today.
Well, I would want to echo Secretary Bellows in saying that nationalism, in my mind, really emerges from a kind of more romantic conception of nationhood that is often rooted in language or race or, religion, ethnicity. And, what Jamie and Shannon are talking about is a shared creedal commitment to our values. And right now we're debating what the 14th Amendment is all about. And really the 14th Amendment was written to take the Declaration of Independence and bring it into the Constitution. And the first article echoes the very language that Shanna read. And so nationalism kind of emerges, not surprisingly, in Germany and led to the deaths of hundreds of millions. But even in the revolutionary era, you're probably referring, Jennifer, to Samuel Johnson, that patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. And he was actually talking about American patriots who were dressing up their values, but he also said about them, why do the loudest yelps for liberty come from the mouths of slaveholders? And so there's a sense that nationalism can actually be a vehicle through kind of mass communication to delude and confuse and populations and lead to violence and imperialism and war. And so in the United States, the tradition has been a creedal nationalism or creedal patriotism, is like the secretary said, is a commitment to a shared framework of the public good. And so, I think that's really how I would split the definitions.
All right, so I want to talk about some of the events coming up. Secretary Bellows, you are chair of the Semi-Quincentennial Commission. We've been talking about the fact that this is coming for a while now. What's on the plate for the next week or two?
So there are so many events, and folks can check them out on the website of the Maine Semi-Quincentennial Commission over the next week and indeed over the next year. And we really focused on lifting up community-based celebrations. So all across the state, from York to Presque Isle, there are things to do this week and beyond. Indeed, Presque Isle is doing events every month of the year this year. But coming right up, so folks who are interested on the second, and I should probably kick this to Jamie because this is a Maine Historical Society event, is a lecture, What Should We Remember About the Declaration of Independence in 2026? Jamie, do you want to talk about Liam Riordan's lecture and then what you're doing actually on July 4th, which I think is incredibly exciting?
Great. Yeah, thank you. So we're kind of leading off the holiday weekend with a lecture by University of Maine professor Liam Riordan, who is going to talk about the Declaration. He's an eminent scholar on the Revolutionary War era. So it's a great way to kind of contextualize that with history, as we love to do. On the 4th of July, we're having an event that's at both City Hall in Portland here at Maine Historical Society with a performance by Julia Haven, Julia Gagna from American Idol, if you recall, kind of patriotic songs. And then we'll be open free to the public until 2. And that is really kind of a big event. At the following week, we kick off a 16-county statewide tour of the Dunlap broadside of the Declaration of Independence, which is one of 26 surviving copies printed on the night of July 4th, 1776. So we're taking that out on the road to all 16 Maine counties as an opportunity for people to see, get outside of the Portland sphere and really bring programming and other opportunities across the state of Maine.
You mentioned that, and we have an email from Mary that says, in Holton, we will be reading the Declaration of Independence on July 8th, the anniversary of its first public reading. The Declaration is imperfect in many ways, which we will acknowledge in an introduction, but it is also our amazing founding document, and we celebrate it. We will read it a la NPR with many voices as diverse as we can. So, Mary, thank you for sending that in. Shenna.
Actually, on July 8th, folks all across the country will be doing that public reading of the Declaration of Independence. So, if you want to join in with folks all across the country, you can go on our website to find or to share your reading location. This is on the Secretary of State's website. Google Maine SOS America 250, and you'll find those events. And it will be happening at 6 p.m. So if you want to read it at home on your deck or in your living room, if you're reading the Declaration at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, you'll be reading the Declaration out loud with Americans all across the country.
I have to ask you, Shenna, about the Maine Atlas Project. We did a whole Maine Calling program talking about that and talking about what ought to be included. I know that's part of this 250th celebration. Is that done? Where are we with the Maine
It
Atlas
is.
Project? And
So
bring us up to speed on what it is for those who happen to have missed the other Maine Calling program.
the Maine Atlas Project is a collection of all of the things that make people, places, historical events, landmarks that make Maine, Maine, and have shaped us over the last 250 years. Again, you can go through the Maine Secretary of State's website. You can Google Maine SOS Atlas, and it's a choose your own adventure of the best of Maine. And you can click on icons. You can map out a little personal tour if you want to, Or you can do an online tour again from your living room. It's a really, I think, special collection, and it will be something that's permanent that will endure.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We are talking about patriotism, and we're talking about the nation's semi-quincentennial, 250 years this Saturday. What are your thoughts about patriotism today? Do you think about it differently than you have at an earlier phase of your life? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. As we mark the nation's 250th birthday, we are examining how Americans show their patriotism. Joining me today, Jamie Rice, who is Deputy Director of the Maine Historical Society, Adam Tuchinsky, a USM professor who specializes in U.S. history, and Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, who chairs the Maine Semi-Quincentennial Commission. I am not going to stumble on that, Shenna. Our phone number today, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Or find us on social media. On the line now is Betsy Richards, who is Executive Director of the Abbey Museum. Betsy is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation and senior partner with Wabanaki Nations. Thanks so much for joining us, Betsy.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
What is the Abbey doing around the 250th anniversary?
Well, we've got a number of things going on. One of the main things is our exhibition, In the Shadow of the Eagle, that explores how Wabanaki people experienced not only the Revolutionary era, but also democracy itself. We also are going to be hosting a copy of the Declaration of Independence in August, and our Dawnland Festival of Arts and Ideas that's happening on the campus of the College of the Atlantic is having a few different panels, but one of them is particularly on Wabanaki Veterans Service, 250 years of Wabanaki Veterans Service. So those are the three things.
Yeah, Betsy, I can only imagine that this birthday celebration and the whole concept of patriotism is complicated from the Wabanaki perspective.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in our exhibition, In the Shadow of the Eagle, our curators and artists tell a story for not only Wabanaki people, we also include some other artists from Northeastern Native Nations, that this whole story doesn't begin with independence from Britain. For Native people, it begins with thousands of years of living here as sovereign nations. And I guess you'd also say the revolution brought hope for some people, but for a lot of Native nations, it brought uncertainty. And a lot of rights were, whereas the kind of promise of the new nation brought rights to people, it actually diminished rights for many Native people.
Can I ask you? What does being patriotic mean to you?
What patriotic means to me is, you know, personally, and I would say for the Abbey too, patriotism isn't about, I don't know, believing that history is perfect. You know, at the Abbey, we care about showing up, learning our full history and honoring those that came before us. And, you know, I would say it's also about being engaged to make this a better country for the next generation. You know, the Wabanaki perspective that we're presenting from our Wabanaki curators doesn't ask people to celebrate. It asks people to understand more. I would even say not celebrate less. It's more like coming to a greater understanding.
Betsy, thank you so much for calling in. Betsy Richards, the Executive Director of the Abbey Museum. I'm going to go to an email that has come in for Dave. I'd like to inject the concept of humanism in this conversation, as patriotism is so unnatural. I'm a humanist and globalist. I'm an American too. My family came 400 years ago. But this concept of patriotism to a governing body is odd for me. I celebrate human achievement and I'm proud of what we can do and stop doing more as a global citizen than as a taxpayer to this government. So a perspective from Dave. One thing that strikes me, Adam, earlier in the program, you mentioned the World Cup. And I think that that's relevant to this conversation today for a lot of reasons. But one is we're seeing that patriotism, of course, is called different things in different countries. But it is universal. We look at as everybody is celebrating their sports teams from the smallest of nations to the largest of nations, and even those nations that are very complicated right now, like Iran.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Dave, for that comment. And in some ways, it reads very Jeffersonian in my mind of thinking of a country like the Declaration of Independence is almost like a prenuptial agreement, and it's a conditional union, a contract. But in the hands of Lincoln, who was a very pragmatic politician who would make half starts and he would disappoint people who are purist on the left, but his orientation was always toward a more perfect union defined by the principles in the Declaration. And to respond to Dave's point, he wedded it to a kind of spirituality, a sense of union and a national love and solidarity, because he realized that the only way people make tremendous sacrifices for one another is if they feel a sense of connection and love, and avoiding making those connective emotions violent toward one another. And so the most successful reform movements in our history from, you know, Seneca Falls, some people read Frederick Douglass in July, What to the Slave is a 4th of July, but Douglass's orientation was highly patriotic. He just wanted the country to live up to the values that are in its founding documents, where some abolitionists like William Lloyd Garrison would burn copies of the Constitution. Douglass celebrated it because he was trying to form allies beyond his own community. And so the feeling that comes through with patriotism, the sense of love and connection and fellow feeling, can be really important to building a better world. It's just we need to make sure the most kind of violent elements that also have potential within nationalist movements are suppressed. So it's always kind of a delicate balance. And, you know, I think sporting events like the World Cup give people a chance to indulge those feelings of pride, even if in reality we're rooting for laundry and, you know, many of the people on the teams come from all over the world, but it does bring people together. I haven't been to Monument Square, but we've seen people gathering there. Our Congolese community has been gathering for, you know, and it brings the community together in a feeling of love and pride. And so I think those things are really positive and help build a better world.
Chenevelos, I have to ask you if right now, and you can answer this probably better than anyone else, because not only are you Secretary of State, but also have run for office and are very involved in the Democratic Party. Is the concept of patriotism now more different, do you believe, than it ever has been?
Wow, that's a question.
I think I'm just reflecting, like if you asked a Democrat and you asked a Republican, and I know I just did not use the word typical because I know there's no such thing as a typical Democrat or typical Republican. But if you asked a group of Democrats or a group of Republicans what patriotism is, do you think the answer would be the same right now?
I think that this is a really challenging moment in our nation's history as we are considering what patriotism means. And for some, for many Democrats, patriotism is protesting out on bridges and in town squares every Saturday with Indivisible and others to stand up for people's rights and for free and fair elections. For others, patriotism is Trump's Freedom 250 Great American State Fair this weekend on the Mall with huge spectacle there. And so I do think, you know, with the Maine Semiquincentennial Commission, one of the things that I think we've been very successful in doing is keeping that completely nonpartisan. We've been really focused on community building events in our local communities that, you know, when we started with Two Lights for Tomorrow, it was the lighting of the lanterns in honor of Paul Revere's ride to warn the Patriots in Concord and Lexington that the British were coming. And that's the type of event that, you know, everyone can do. Democrats, Republicans, it doesn't matter what your partisan affiliation is. And I do think history is something that brings us together, even if we bring a different lens to it. So I do think that there are probably some significant differences between how Democrats and Republicans may view patriotism in this moment. Some may view it through the lens of protesting Trump. Others may view it through the lens of supporting Trump. But I think ultimately, for me, patriotism is something that transcends partisanship and that really is rooted in community building. And back to Adam's perspective, this shared creed and these shared ideals that, you know, in fits and starts through struggle, we have been trying to reach. And when Betsy was talking about the Wabanaki veterans, I was reflecting on, you know, back in the American Revolution, it was Chief Joseph Orono, Penobscot chief, going to meet with Washington, committing the Penobscot Nation to the American Revolution and to the Declaration. And those Wabanaki treaties then written into the founding of Massachusetts and then to the founding of our state, but then held secret, right? The Mainers in a constitutional convention hid the Wabanaki Treaty obligations from the Maine Constitution until 2023. And Wabanaki people were not able to vote in state elections in Maine until 1967. So I share that story because I think that, you know, our nation has never been perfect. It's been imperfect. It's imperfect in this moment. And patriotism is about believing in the ideals, believing in each other, and continuing to engage and connect and try to move forward.
All right. And Adam, I see you nodding. And I want to have you put your historian hat on and tell me about throughout the last 250 years, I'm sure there have been ebbs and flows in how patriotic people feel and whether that depends on what region of the country they live in or what political party they're affiliated with. Can you talk about some of those?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to even say, as Secretary Bellows did, is just how patriotism manifests itself. But I think for those of us who grew up in the 20th century, living in the shadow of World War II, we have a little bit of a misguided sense of how unified the country generally is. And people look at what things are like now, but, you know, Abraham Lincoln was vilified the Mexican-American War and accused the president of being a liar. The Civil War, the country was torn apart. The Revolution, 20% of the country were loyalists, many of whom left the country. It goes on and on. And I think the question really is, and I do call out the modern left a little bit because oftentimes, you know, I was always a little disappointed when the NFL players kneeled in stadiums during the national anthem as if it wasn't theirs. And, you know, I think sometimes when people are being disappointed in the country, they surrender their feeling of love. And the philosopher Richard Rorty talked about exercising the kind of dissenting patriotism. And you could see it in someone like Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X, who was something of a separatist, wanted to remove his people from the National Union, where Martin Luther King made the case for justice in the very language that was shared across the country. And so for people wanting to drive progress toward our creed, I think it's always behooves it those groups to remember that solidarity and criticism needs to be wedded to one another in a kind of balance. And that's what Lincoln did. That's what Martin Luther King did. And I think that's how generally progress toward our more sacred values usually occurs.
Jamie, your thoughts on patriotism through American history?
Oh, well, I would sort of echo what Adam said. You know, we as a country have been here before. You know, it feels different. It certainly is different. The way that we get our news and kind of inundated with the content differs a lot from what you'd see in history, but it's challenging. I mean, I think when you look at like the First World War, what it meant to be a patriot at that time was supporting the war effort 100%. And even speaking out against the war effort was seen as unpatriotic. So I think you can look at different pieces in history. Why it's so important to learn history and to engage with history is to understand history and can use that to contextualize what we're going through as a nation and be more informed when we look to solutions. And some of that comes from what it means to be a patriot, but more importantly, or maybe just as extensively, is what people may perceive as being unpatriotic and understanding that patriotism takes all forms and being different doesn't make someone unpatriotic.
Okay, let's see here. We'll go to an email here from Maggie, an email from Maggie. It is sad but true that July 4th is the only time one can fly the American flag without being assumed to be Trump adherent. So I'm glad you brought this up, Maggie. I wanted to talk about the American flag. I was in the hardware store the other day and two people in front of me were both purchasing American flags. I'll turn back to you, Adam. Is Maggie right? Are there people today who will only fly an American flag this week?
You know, I'd almost like to ask Maggie some more follow-up questions like you do, Jennifer. But, you know, I think it's, you know, this is the thing that makes me sad is I think every American should claim the flag as their own and insist that it represents their point of view. And, you know, I think because, like Jamie said, you know, I studied the early 19th century and I encountered Whigs like Abraham Lincoln being called un-American for opposing the Mexican-American War. You know, so this kind of rhetoric goes back deep in our history of using nationalism to try to limit kinds of political perspectives across the political spectrum. And that reeks of a kind of nationalism that I think is foreign to what our best traditions are. And, you know, coming back to the 14th Amendment, it says, like, what are we being patriotic to? The 14th Amendment in its first article says that all persons born and naturalized in the United States are Americans, and that every American has the right to the equal protection of the law and to equal citizenship. And it was a rebuke to a more romantic style of nationalism that, you know, said that Americans are a race and not a creed. And the Dred Scott decision to which the 14th Amendment responded argued that people of African descent are so far inferior that they had no rights the white man was bound to respect, and that the Negro might justly and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his own benefit. And so you have two visions of what America is, you know, and which one is more patriotic? You know, I would ask most of your listeners to, is it the 14th Amendment? Is it Abraham Lincoln? Or is it Dred Scott, who has a definition of what it is, what we're being patriotic to, that is truly rooted in race, you know, rather than a set of fundamental principles, is what really makes the United States unique. Many countries can't celebrate a birth because it goes back deep into history, but we founded a country with a Declaration of Independence and ultimately a Constitution, which was a set of ideas. And then politicians, wonderfully, I would say, debate its meaning in front of the public. And we have the opportunity to vote, and secretaries of state protect our right to vote and weigh in. And I think that's something to be deeply patriotic for. And you know, I wish that the entire country would be able to embrace, you know, a sense of pride, even while we also acknowledge where we're not living up. It's an imperfect union, but we work to make it better together.
Yeah, but you also, I want to ask each of you, if you don't mind, about the flag as well. Shenna, do you feel as though for some, the flag has become something that it wasn't even 10 or 20 years ago?
Perhaps, although when I was a kid, I wrote my first letter to the editor against amending the Constitution to ban flag burning. And that's because flag burning was a hot topic in the late 80s and early 90s. And of course, from my perspective as a kid, the right to dissent, the right to protest is patriotism itself. So I think that, for perhaps since the founding of the flag itself, there have probably been mixed feelings about it. But my advice to Maggie is if you love the American flag, fly it all year round. And I immediately went to my neighbor, Mark Johnson of Manchester. He takes care of all the flags in town. So if a neighbor's flag starts to get tattered and torn, he replaces it. He does some remarkable, just volunteer work to keep the flag looking beautiful everywhere in our town. And that's something that I love, and I've never thought about where that comes from or the politics of it. It's just something that he does to support community and support her. So I like the flag personally, and I think if Maggie likes it, she should fly it.
Jamie.
I also agree. I think the flag can mean different things to different people. And if you like the flag, embrace the flag. And I can see, in the world that we live in, it's hard to kind of tune out the noise, and it might get pushback from people. But it's a symbol of this country, and I think it's an important one and deserves respect. But people, it can mean something different to everyone. So fly the flag.
Will you be flying your American flag this weekend? Are you thinking about patriotism much this week as the nation celebrates 250 years since the Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about Maine's celebration of the nation's 250th birthday, also known as the semi-quincentennial. We're also talking about patriotism. Joining me for the hour, Adam Tuchinsky with the University of Southern Maine, Secretary of State Shenna Bellows with Maine's Semi-Quincentennial Commission, and Jamie Rice with the Maine Historical Society. You can share your comments and questions. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I know that Shenna, you'd like to highlight something else coming up. Tell us about the potluck, the big potluck.
So on July 5th is a National America's Potluck. So here in Maine, we're celebrating with Community Plate. The Maine Semi-Quincentennial Commission invites everyone to join us at Viles Arboretum. It's a noontime potluck, so from 12:30 to 3, and all 50 states will be hosting their own America's Potluck. And actually, in my hometown of Hancock, there's another America's Potluck on July 5th as well. And I have to just give a shout out to Community Plate and Maine Arts Commission. They have organized America's Potlucks all across the state, and they'll be continuing to do potlucks into the fall. And I think, the tradition of a community potluck is so truly quintessentially American and really a wonderful time for people to come together around food and conversation.
I was thinking the exact same thing. What's more American than a potluck supper? Jamie, what else would you like to highlight?
Right here at Maine Historical Society in Portland, on view through the December 31st, is our exhibition Pathways to Freedom, Maine Stories of the American Revolution, that highlights Maine's role during the Revolutionary War and tells those stories through six individuals that were living in the District of Maine at the time. And to speak to our earlier conversations, really, focuses on diverse experiences, indigenous and colonial, patriot and loyalist, white, black men, women, officers, enlisted men. And so it's a great way to really understand the role that Maine played in the revolution.
All right. And Adam, what's going on at USM?
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. And first, I'd like to thank Jamie for having Julie Gagnon on her program. She is a USM student, great singer, but also a history major. So we're really proud of her. But also, at our Osher Mapp Library opening in September, we're doing an exhibit on America's founding memories. So it's a history of how Americans over the last 250 years through textbooks and images and other memorabilia have understood the meaning of the revolution and how that has changed over time. And so we're excited about launching that when most of our students get back in the fall. So thank you for the opportunity to share that.
All right. Well, apparently we've been having a little bit of trouble with our calls, but someone's gotten through. We've got Scott in Lisbon Falls. Is that right? Is this Scott?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound like you're on speakerphone, though.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I thought I didn't have a wasn't there.
You are. Yeah, no, I apologize for the technical problems. Every once in a while we have them.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go
Is
ahead.
that better?
Yep.
Okay, yes. Couple things. One, I was in the Army during Vietnam, and I would qualify as a liberal. I have an American flag on the front of my property. I have it properly lit at night so it can be out all night. I'm proud of it. I also oftentimes will see people with pickup trucks with big flags in them, and I often will ask these people if I happen to see them what service they were in, and I have yet to find any one of them that had ever served. So I think that we veterans really wear our patriotism in our hearts rather than, by being ostentatious with the flag.
That's interesting. And Scott, you bring up such an interesting point because here in Maine, we have one of the highest levels of military service. I believe we go back and forth with Alaska. But today, there are so many fewer Americans who serve.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
I would like the draft to be reinstated, believe it or not. But for everybody, men and women, and for not necessarily military.
Yeah, a lot of people would love to see, young Americans
Sure.
serve a year or two of public service.
Yeah.
Scott, would
Exactly.
you consider yourself to be a patriot?
I would. I would. I debated when I was drafted, literally, whether I should, can I try to be a conscientious objector? And I realized very quickly I wasn't conscientiously objecting. I was just didn't want to go. But I did. I chose to go because that was the proper thing to do, it felt like. So I had to stick with my own integrity there.
Well, Scott, I
But
appreciate
I
you
do
call.
consider myself a patriot.
I appreciate you calling in, and I hope you have a great weekend celebrating the 4th. We have an email here from Donna Loring. The Wabanaki Nations were not on the sidelines during the founding of the United States. They were active participants in history. There were diplomats, military allies, negotiators, and sovereign governments making decisions that affected the outcome of events in northeastern America. Telling that story does not subtract from the American story, it completes it. That history makes celebration more complicated. Many Wabanaki people feel pride in the military service of Native veterans, pride in caring for this homeland, and pride in the resilience of their communities. At the same time, they carry the memory of land loss, broken agreements, and generations of policies that sought to diminish tribal sovereignty. Recognizing those truths does not diminish the country's history, it enriches it. The 250th anniversary is an opportunity to tell a fuller, more honest American story that includes everyone. And Jamie, I suspect you couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. I think Wabanaki nations in particular have a strong story associated with the Revolutionary War. One of the first treaties, not the first treaty, signed by the new American government was with Wabanaki Nation. So I think it's a unique experience, an important experience, and I would agree it doesn't diminish, it completes the history.
Amy on Facebook writes, "To me, being patriotic means liberty and justice for all. It means we the people equals all of us. It means the pursuit of happiness for everyone. It means one nation indivisible. It means we are a country of immigrants. It means being kind and I'm embracing diversity, equality, and inclusion. It means dreams and possibilities are attainable for everyone, not just for the few. It means peaceful, but forcefully fighting against forces that threaten these things." And an email here from Steve. "To the listener who thinks only Trump followers fly the flag, go out and buy one today and fly it to represent your values. That's what we do. And flying the American flag over our lawn with the Black Lives Matter sign makes clear our values. Let's all start talking with each other about what we love about our country better than focusing only on what's wrong. And Adam, I see you nodding.
Yeah, of course. And the stream of what has come in has rendered me speechless uncharacteristically. But, you know, I did actually, you went very quickly, Jennifer, but when you mentioned, you know, that Democrats and Republicans, you can't necessarily peg them as like a uniform set of two groups. I just really appreciated that. And to get back to Scott, you know, USM has the largest veteran population, active duty, I think, in the state. And I teach classes with them on American history exclusively. And their values, their principles are so much more diverse than they are kind of represented like in the media conventionally. And they have very complex relationships to war, to our history. And, you know, I think when we get together with people, we're all so much more complicated than we're often depicted in, you know, newspaper coverage of political debates. And so I guess like Jamie, you know, I think all of us, you know, we just make a case for complexity. And that's what really the study of history is all about, is to try to understand the nuances of various points of views at various periods of time. And so conversations like this one, I deeply value. And so thank you for having me on.
We'll go to Alan calling from Winterport. Hi, Alan, go ahead.
Hi, I don't recall who said this, but loyalty to the country always, loyalty to the government when it deserves it. It was either Ed Abbey or Mark Twain or Utah Phillips, one of those heroes of mine.
All right, Alan, thank you for that. Do any of you know who said it? No. It looks like all our guests have heard it as well, Alan, though. Thank you. Let's see. We'll move to Charles calling from Bass Harbor. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi. I just wanted to make a different point as a Vietnam veteran, that we don't all feel the same way as Scott does about being a veteran. I came home and joined the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and I've you know, opposed every war since. And when I last time I saluted the flag was the day I was discharged, and I vowed never to salute it again until the U.S. apologizes to North Vietnam. I have it, but I plan to again when Trump dies and the flags are lowered to half-mast. I'm going to go around and raise every one of them and salute the flag for the first time in, I don't know, 60-some years.
That's Charles, thanks for your call. And, you know, I think what Charles is saying just shows what a powerful symbol that flag is, and how deeply held beliefs about it are. Charles, thank you so much for calling in. We're almost out of time, and we have so many emails coming in. Why don't I go to this one? This person says the flag is a symbol that changes. During the first Trump administration, I wanted to put up a flag. This is from John. I wanted to put up a flag, but two of our kids said, no, Dad, that's the flag of fascism. So, you know, maybe different generations see the flag differently. And Adam, you teach young people. Are you hearing different interpretations of what the flag represents?
I do. And, you know, we also see a lot of groups. It's we're also coming out of Pride Month, and you see different visions of the flag associated with that event. You also see different visions of the flag associated with the Trump administration, Blue Lives Matter. You see a lot of representations of the flag. And I think the thing I value the most, which you might value the most as well, of being part of the First Amendment and being part of an educational institution, our deepest value is not what people say, but often their right to say it. And so that's kind of what makes me patriotic. And, you know, I would like young people to read more history. And if they are activists, be more strategic. I don't want to shape their values, but be more strategic and look what has succeeded in bringing about the change that people want and what has failed. And often division is not a great way to build a majority in a democratic society. And, you know, I think every group in the country that has been successful has managed to combine a fellow feeling of patriotism with their political point of view and how it measures up against our founding creeds. And so, you know, I would just again make a case for going to Maine Historical Society, going to the Osher Map Library, and taking history classes.
That will be the last word today. That is Professor, History Professor, Dr. Adam Tuchinsky, a professor of history at the University of Southern Maine. Also with us for the hour, Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, who is chair of the Maine Semi-Quincentennial Commission, and Jamie Rice, deputy director of the Maine Historical Society. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we explore the American dream and what it means today. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.